Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:38 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is September 2nd. I thought we'd kick off with the VIX index because it looks like we have a higher reaction low. And over the course of the last 5 months, every time it's come back down to the 15 level, it's bounced. And that's been consistent with the buy the dip environment on the S&P 500. So every little dip we've had, then it's been bought, and that has ensured that volatility on average has been declining. Although I think arguably the downtrend has lost momentum and now we're more in a rangy environment over the course of the last 2 months. But when we then think about, well, how has the S&P 500 been trending? Well, the first thing I think is really very apparent is how narrow the band of trading has been. And we haven't had a reaction of more than 5% since October. So every time the S&P has pushed onto a new high, then it has had difficulty holding onto it, and it has been dipping back down into the underlying ranges. And the most consistent thing about it is that it's held the sequence of higher reaction lows. So in order to really question the consistency of the trend higher, then that sequence of higher lows would have to be broken, which in this case would represent a pullback below the 4,400 level. So that does suggest that there is about 128 points of fat on the index, but that's only about 3%. So that would be a very mild pullback, and yet it's almost to be expected that we would have a suite of dire headlines from the financial media in the event that we did get downward dynamics similar to what we saw in August, in July, in June, and in May. So not only have we had pullbacks, but we've also had pullbacks that have coincided with the expiry of options. So if we look at the most popular of the options, or the ETFs on which options are written, the SPY, and think about the middle of the month, we've had declines ahead of the migration into so these options would expire on the 17th of September. There is plenty of volume, several thousand contracts are being traded, and we know that there's a lot of retail investors are extremely active in buying calls. So it would suggest that there is going to be at least some pressure on those call buyers to begin to take profits, or then they'll have a decision in front of them whether they want to roll forward those positions. And we've had pullbacks heading into these events every month for the last three or four. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that over the course of the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a pop on the upside in volatility. We're going to have another opportunity for buy the dip in traders to step in and buy at a discount of a couple of percent before prices start to push higher again. Then let's think about some of the larger constituents, because obviously there are very large companies that have a significant bearing on the outlook for the market. Apple pushed on to new all-time highs on Monday, and it's been a little softer over the course of the last 2 days. So now the big question is it going to sustain this breakout? And well, at least as long as it's holding the $150 area, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I think investors are beginning to be more enthused with regard to Apple because of the range of additional potential applications that will be introduced to the new Apple watches. Everything from blood pressure monitoring to temperature monitoring. So those are potentially useful applications, and they do point towards Apple becoming more of a healthcare company, which would open up a whole range of additional potential revenue streams. So there's certainly a bullish argument behind it, but obviously it's an exceptionally large company now at a market cap of 2.5 trillion. So opening up additional growth avenues is exceptionally important, but then how big will those growth avenues in fact be to help justify the size of the magnitude of the valuation? Netflix also popped on the upside this week, so it's at a new all-time high. And now testing the upper side of this range, the big question will be whether it can hold this move. We've had a meaningful run higher over the last 2 weeks, going from 500 and change to almost 600. So now the question is, will the short-term overbought condition be consolidated, and we see at least a little pause here before it can push on to new high ground? Certainly, we've seen a lot of choppy action over the course of the last 12 months, and every time it's got up to this level, it's failed. So now the big question is whether it can continue on from here. I saw interesting research in here today that turning off one's camera helps with Zoom fatigue. But of course, then that also raises the question, what is different from simply a conference call? And Zoom is right at the lower side of its range. So certainly some of these meme stocks from last year are losing the power to influence investors. Peloton has had to cut the cost of its exercise machines. They've bought Precor, so they're certainly going to be a force in the market for the foreseeable future. But quite whether that's going to be capable of sustaining the valuation is certainly out there to be answered. And then some of the more conventional companies that investors have been really enthused about over the course of the last while, well, they're not performing. They don't show real evidence of a lot of interest any longer. GameStop has been going sideways now since February, and it did pop on the upside about 2 weeks ago, and it's holding the $200 area, but certainly not the kind of fireworks that we saw in the early part of this year. Then Bed Bath and Beyond is another company that has pulled back and really not going anywhere or doing much of anything right now. Where we are starting to see increasing fireworks, and where there's certainly a migration of retail investor interest now, is into cryptocurrencies. And the Ethereum price continues to push on the upside, up another $54 in here today, and certainly sustaining this breakout from the short-term range. We haven't had quite the same degree of fireworks in Bitcoin, but it is testing the 50,000 level again in here today. And right at the upper side of this very tight, narrow range overall. I've been quite vocal in saying that I believe that cryptocurrencies are reflecting the outlook for global liquidity. And the original white paper for Bitcoin was written in the teeth of the financial crisis in 2007. So it's certainly designed, and by design, they are acting as just reflections of global liquidity. Central bank balance sheets in aggregate continue to trend higher. They're up to about 32 trillion right now, and it's still trending higher. When we think about the outlook for the global economy and the significant social issues that have arisen and as a result of the pandemic, and also just as a result of or I think the pandemic itself has highlighted a lot of the inequalities that are evident within most societies. Whether that is between the haves and the have-nots, or between established communities and immigrants, or whether it's between various racial groups, religious groups, or gender groupings, then obviously there is a lot to talk about. But of course, the other point is that prices are rising and wages are not keeping pace, and the polarization that we're seeing in the political environment is still increasingly wide. We have evidence of this in a number of European countries. It's certainly evident in the USA still, and this is not going away anytime soon. One thing that I think everybody is aware of is that political polarization has erupted after the financial crisis, so it is as much a product of extraordinary monetary policy and quantitative easing as it is of the failure of multiculturalism to integrate populations, of globalization to protect the interests of the established countries while also helping to benefit emerging market countries. So those are certainly factors that are contributing to this polarization overall, but perhaps from the more important point from a market's perspective is it's extremely unlikely that any country is going to seriously engage in fiscal austerity against a background where there is the real potential for significant populist unrest. Because the last thing, and I suppose the one thing that politicians are afraid of more than anything else is a mob in the street, and they will do whatever is necessary to placate people. So we're in a bread and circuses environment, and as food prices rise, it's increasingly likely that there will be efforts implemented to ensure that those prices don't continue to rise. And initially, that will be regulatory in nature, and eventually, it's likely that we'll see price controls. And when you start to see price controls, it's a desperate measure by governments, and generally, it's a reflection of extreme inflationary pressures that continue to mount in the economy. So, when we think about the gold price, it's holding around the $1,800 area. It was a little softer in here today. And it really hasn't gone anywhere since the pop on the upside last week. We're right in the region of the highs from back in July, but I do think that the most important thing that gold has done was break downwards in early August and then pop straight back up again. So we have this very clear long tail on the candle. And that's generally consistent with a panicky environment where people were forced sellers. And then a big bid coming back into the market. Then, when we think about who are the big buyers of gold, well, central banks are big buyers of gold, and then ETFs are significant, also big investors. And the trend of ETF purchases has not yet popped on the upside. So, it is certainly something to pay attention to because. If we start to see ETF buying of gold on aggregate breaking out of this very narrow little range that's been forming for most of the last 6 months, then it would be a very clear sign of a return to demand dominance. We're not quite there yet. What this trend tells us is that investors are not quite convinced yet that gold is ready to run on the upside. But going back and thinking about that medium-term trend, well, the downward bias in gold has been broken. The downtrend has clearly been broken. Now we have the potential that we've just seen a higher reaction low. So we're still in an environment where we could have choppy action. But as long as the lows are holding, then I think the odds are very much in favor of a return to demand dominance, and that we're coming out the other end of what's already been a year-long consolidation. And we've had plenty of evidence of those kinds of consolidations over the course of the last bull market in gold. There were plenty of times when it went sideways for 18 months at a time. So we're probably in a similar kind of situation now. The price has already been going sideways for a year, and we're starting to see just the first evidence of the price beginning to steady. And if that's the case, well, then the chances are that we're going to move back into a bullish environment overall. I would think that the situation that we have today is rather similar to what we had in 2004. We had the initial pop on the upside and a very enthusiastic environment where prices had just pushed through $400. And then they pulled back extremely violently in a very short period of time in April of 2004, and then rebounded, and over the course of the next 5 months, pushed on to new all-time highs, or not all-time highs, but recovery highs. So I think that it's not unrealistic to think that that's what we can anticipate from gold over the course, or at least the balance of this year. And then we can think about why that might be the case. Well, I think it's obvious that we have some inflationary pressures. When central banks talk about transitory, they're very careful not to say what they mean by transitory. I think it's more likely than not that what we're going to see is a rerun of the 1970s environment where we get just waves of inflation. So we've had a big wave of inflation over the course of the last year, and it's been sporadic in different sectors. And that might even die down for a while, and we might not see the kind of year-over-year gains in prices that we've seen over the last year, but that the rate will settle well above what prevailed ahead of the pandemic, and that there will be ample opportunity for the price to prices on average to push higher later and at a much faster clip than what anyone has been accustomed to. Oil prices were up $1.24 today, so we're increasingly seeing evidence of upside follow through on the big upper dynamic that we saw last week. So this is clear evidence of support in the region of the trend mean. It looks more likely than not that prices up around $80 will be seen over the course of the next few weeks. And then the big question is whether we're going to see the price push through the $80 area. Natural gas has also continued to do well, and it has held the break above the $4 area. So it's looking increasingly likely that this supply deficit environment that's been featured in the natural gas commentary is not something that's going to be easily corrected. And UK natural gas prices continue to surge higher. So there is an acute supply shortage in here, and there's no evidence yet that this has changed. And then we also have the carbon credits price. And it has pushed through the $60 area. It was a little weaker yesterday, and then just was able to push straight back up again in here today. So it is holding the breakout from what was a 3 to 4 month range. This is a politically motivated market. I'm posting an article today which highlights some of the challenges that a major fishing port like Grimsby has had to deal with. My uncle was the parish priest of Grimsby for more than a decade, and I spent a fair number of weekends up there. And I think it would be fair to say that it's a tough town. But the reality is that it was at one time the biggest fishing port in the world, and it's no longer that. But one thing that the fishermen are having difficulty there is finding workers. And they can't compete with the kinds of wages that are being offered by the renewable energy companies. And there are substantial numbers of wind turbines that have been installed off the east coast of the UK. And the wind ETF is now firming in a more convincing fashion from the region of the trend mean as well. But if fishermen can't get the staff for their ships, well, and their boats, well, then they can't go out fishing as often. That means the catch will be lower and the price goes up, and that we've had plenty of evidence of that. Everything from scallops to king crab to Dover sole has been rising in price. So Having fish on a Friday is going to increasingly feel like a luxury for a significant portion of the population. And having a fish and chips is going to get progressively more expensive. And it's these kinds of basic staples that people take for granted. And when they start rising in price, that creates an inflationary psychology. And it's particularly going to be relevant if we see the price of grains rising. So that's not happening right now. We've had a bit of a pullback over the course of the last few weeks in things like wheat and soybeans, but it's not especially large in terms of the size of the pullback. And the upward bias to trading continues to hold. If we see continued upside, whether it is weather driven or whether it's as a result of substitution in terms of crops, then that will also contribute to additional social pressures. Lumber prices were limit up today, so it's increasingly likely that this area around the $400 level will hold, and that we are now in a new price structure overall where it's unlikely that prices will ever fall back below 400 again, and that we're going to move into another volatile range where we're going to have pops on the upside and a lot of volatility, but that the move higher or the upper side of this range is now in excess of $1,600. So the peak to trough swings are likely to be extraordinary, in a manner quite similar to what we had in the aftermath of the last big pop on the upside in the early 1990s, where we had a lot of volatility between about $200 and $400. Whereas today, even if it were a double, then we'd be looking at a move from about 500 up to 1,000. So it's quite likely that inflation in terms of building costs, inflation in terms of wages, because people are going to start demanding more money. And this is also something that we saw in the late 1990s, that people didn't really go back to work. There was a large swathe of the population, particularly younger to middle-aged men, who stayed out of the workforce because they turned to day trading. And this continued advance that we're seeing in cryptocurrencies and the emerging mania that we're seeing in non-fungible tokens, well, that's a major profit center for a significant proportion of the economy, and a lot of people have become cashed up as a result of the extraordinary amount of money that's been poured into the system. So, this is also representative of bubbly activity, but we don't have any evidence yet that the liquidity is being removed. And in fact, with the credit impulse in China starting to turn back upwards, the beginning of a new credit cycle in India, the unwillingness of governments to adopt fiscal austerity and the willingness of their same central banks to continue to print new money, well, then that does suggest that we're still in a bull market overall, despite the fact that we have some short-term potential for a pullback on overbought markets. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.